Welcome back to a special episode of Dateline.
Oh, God.
Do you know where your children are?
Okay.
You better not.
I don't have any kids.
I'm going to say, please, please don't.
I know where your children are, Lewis.
Where?
I don't know.
I don't have those either, and I'm not gonna.
All right. Well, I imagine you, like, eventually being Julie Andrews in Sound of Music.
And being, adopting eight children.
Yeah. Say,
being, I do have her, like, gentle rosacea. That's it, though.
We are back for another episode of Keep It, and Kara is just racking up this list of white women.
I am knocking it out. Guys, I saw Celine Dion on Friday in Vegas. She was unbelievable. Like, actually, she was made for Vegas. She was so goofy, and she had her, like, it was basically like a half stand-up set. She sounds honestly better live than she does on her recordings.
Which is crazy.
And she was just in, like, sparkles. She was nuts the whole time. She did, like, a 10-minute intro to that song she did for Deadpool. Why?
Wow.
Why?
Oh, my God.
I learned she can raise her eyebrows independently of each other. Why do I know that at her show? How did I learn that at her concert? But I learned it.
I saw the footage on your Instagram. She really is like a rare bird. Like a walking, like a cassowary or something. Something large and tall and swan-like.
Also, we made eye contact at one point. I felt it. I feel renewed.
Were you in the pit?
Yeah, like we had really good seats. And then so, like, during the part when she, like, put on her short dress and did her Prince covers, we, like, moved to the pit and we looked at each other for a moment.
Listen, being in the pit in Vegas is where it is at. Lewis, that's where we were when we saw J-Lo. And it was just like being that close to an artist.
Yeah. Because you would never, because it's in, like, a normal type of theater. And so if they're, like, if Celine Dion or J-Lo went on tour, normally they'd be at a stadium. So you could just literally, you physically couldn't get that close to them. Also at, like, a festival or anything like that. This is literally just, like, you're touching the stage.
Yeah. Also, she did Prince covers?
She did Prince covers!
Did she do Pussy Control? What did she do?
She did Purple Rain. And then she did... Fuck, I'm forgetting the other one.
Little Red Corvette sounds like it'd be up.
She might have done, like, Raspberry. I don't think she did Raspberry Beret, but something in that that tempo.
Classic, yeah.
But yeah, she did Purple Rain, and then, like, the part where his guitar solo, she sang it.
Oh my God.
It was like.
Well, also, by the way, I associate her with air guitar because she was on one of the much later, I'm going to say Divas Live things. And she and Anastasia, do you remember that singer? Like, she did air guitar for like 4 minutes doing You Shook Me All Night Long by AC/DC. So she is out of control and the best.
She's crazy and perfect. And I love her. And it confirmed my love for her. And I am knocking out that white women list. Who is next?
Come on, Juliana Margulies. That's who I'm rooting for.
But it's Alicia, she's got to be Alicia Florek.
In character.
She has to guest on The Good Fight as Alicia Florek, right. And you have to be on set.
Okay. That actually, there's a few hurdles there, but we might be able to clear them.
Speaking of white women.
Yes.
Lady Gaga.
Yes, I know her.
Of the German Notas.
I can't get over that clip.
She has lost her mind.
But we knew this, though.
Of course. I knew that this award season tour for her was going to be extra, but her speech at the Critics' Choice Awards when she tied with Glenn Close was extra.
Did she stop sobbing? She won the award and, like, broke down. Like, this is the critic, as you pointed out, this is the Critics' Choice Awards. I mean, amazing, but what are you crying about?
Right.
What are you crying about?
It's like the sixth most important award.
It's airing on the CW, as Busy Phillips posted on her Instagram when she won one, like, several years ago. It used to just be in a basement and didn't air on TV.
The other thing about her reaction to this stuff is, like, if it's a movie... A movie like a Moonlight or even like Dallas Buyers Club, something where you feel like, wow, a thing we haven't seen before. What
issues.
A big cultural moment. Like, bitch, they already made this movie, what, 3 or 4 times? Like,
you're talking about the character, like, and doing this for me, Bradley. You played yourself.
Right. Like, I mean, good for you, but This isn't that big of a moment.
Also, they keep flashing back to like Bradley in the crowd, and I'm just watching the movie of him processing her again and again, and it's just, I'm wondering if he's at a place of, can she just stop? I just feel like you can see the life slowly draining from him.
You know, she also told a story backstage that I hadn't heard, not the 100 people in the room bullshit, but the one about during her audition, and she was in like, quote unquote, no makeup, because most men cannot tell, despite what they think, when women are wearing makeup or not. And he pulled out like a makeup remover and wiped her face and wiped the makeup off her face. If a man did that to me, the body bag that he would be in would arrive so swiftly. Are you crazy?
There's a scene like that in the movie, and I think it's a reference to an older A Star Is Born movie. That said, to do that in the audition.
In the audition!
Yeah, a little cray-cray.
It's a little crazed. And it's just so funny to be him continuously sitting in the audience watching her go on and on.
That's what he's going to be doing.
He's definitely going to lose.
Yes, no one is rewarding him for anything for this movie.
No. He is looking very shiny these days.
I just wish she would, because she looks amazing. Like, I thought she looked amazing at the Golden Globes. I thought she looked great at the Critics' Choice Awards. I'm, like, not trying to root against her, but I just, there's got to be less of this.
Here's the thing, though. If she loses and Glenn wins, I honestly believe Glenn will do, like, a front handspring into some splits, and I am excited for that. Glenn is having the time of her life with this award season.
Don't you think the Oscars will give it to it?
Yeah.
Like, she's older, and, like, she's such a classic.
Yeah, and she's also so famous at this point for not having an Oscar that if we give it to Julianne Moore for Still Alice, which was a movie that I believe cost $30, then I think we have room to give it to Glenn Close.
If Gaga wins, do you think she drops that speech on Instagram?
Ooh, what do you mean?
The Oscar speech.
Oh,
that she would have given.
Sure, like thanking all the people anyway?
You know she has it typed out.
Right.
Already. Written on some Dead Sea Scroll.
Yeah, with like interpretive dance in it and stuff. Yeah.
Coming up in this episode, we will be joined by Nina Parker of several E! Shows, Nightly Pop and...
Pretty Wild. No, I'm just saying all E! Shows now.
The Royals.
Yes.
And we will be talking about Bryan Cranston in The Upside.
Forgot about that, didn't we?
We'll talk about R. Kelly today again. And we're going to talk about some politics. You ready, Lewis?
I don't know.
We're coming for that Pod Save America chair.
I'm going to say, watch out, Favreau.
You'll never be on Keep It.
Oh, my God.
We'll be right back. Last week, we talked about Lifetime airing Surviving R. Kelly, and since then, a slew of celebrities have been forced to confront their complicity and apologize, basically. People have been removing their songs from iTunes. Mm-hmm. Lady Gaga removed her Do What You Want song, and Christina Aguilera did like an Instagram post where she urged people to listen to her version with Gaga to support women making music.
It was weird.
Together. Wasn't it weird?
Also, how many people remembered that version?
I mean, I love that. Don't speak to me that way, Kara. But no, you're right. We don't need to listen to it right now.
Yeah. Just gay men who tweet. Those are the only ones who remember that version.
It's mostly a performance from The Voice, right? That they then recorded. Yeah, right. Okay.
Celine Dion is removing her 1998 collaboration with R. Kelly called I'm Your Angel,
which
appeared on her holiday album.
I know.
See, Celine was like, these Americans. <You know?
laughs> Also, Celine was probably... One of the things I think is interesting with all of this is like, Celine Dion and R. Kelly made that song in 1998. And like his child pornography trial was in 2002. So you have all these people who just like truly didn't know. And also, mm-hmm. He was incredibly famous and successful. Like, that was, I think 1998 was when, like, I Believe I Can Fly mm-hmm. came out. So it's like, you have all of those people who I like how they're just sort of quietly taking the music down. Because I don't think that requires an explanation. Like, why did you work with him in 1998? Because he was fucking R. Kelly in 1998.
No one's dragging Celine.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't think she was up on the Aaliyah shit.
Right, like that. And also, there was no internet. Like, we all didn't really know what was happening.
Right.
But it's these sort of more recent people where I'm like, I am glad you were explaining this. Because in 2013, It does require an explanation why you were making a song with R. Kelly.
We neglected to mention it last week because I frankly forgot, but R. Kelly has a collabo with Mariah.
Oof, girl.
It was supposed to be on Memoirs of an Imperfect Angel, hip hop EP sequel, and then it ended up on her 2016 album, Me, I Am Mariah.
Oh, yeah, girl, you know.
And she brought him out for a holiday performance in 2016, too. So, but also, you think Mariah cares about anybody but herself? She will never address it, ever.
I forget sometimes that when you say a Mariah Carey album title out loud, like, how can you get through it without, like, laughing? It's so amazing.
I didn't even say the full title.
I know.
Me, I Am Mariah, the Elusive Chanteuse.
With, like, the very liberal versions of punctuation therein.
One thing I will say, Lady Gaga's apology was good.
Yeah.
However, my one bone to pick with her was she kept focusing on how young she was when she made this song, but you were 27 years old.
Yeah, it's not that young.
You were an adult-ass woman, and it happens a lot with, like, white men who rape women where they're like, he was just a kid and he was like 27 years old. You're like, no. It felt like she was passing the buck a little bit by being like, I was young. Also, it's not like you were making the music alone. Like, you were Lady Gaga. You had a whole team of people who were, I'm sure, advising you to do this or whatever. So it's not like you made this decision in a vacuum as a wee 27-year-old adult.
I also feel bad in a way because last week I was nitpicking some of the music choices in the R. Kelly documentary when apparently they needed to make this documentary so that these damn celebrities would apologize. It wouldn't have happened otherwise, you know? So I guess just thanks to the fucking filmmakers for like...
And Dreamhampton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Phoenix, a French band that I have literally never heard of, apologized.
I think I knew it was a band. I knew that. Okay.
Maybe I've heard the name, but I don't know their music.
Right.
Anyway, they apologized for a 2013 collaboration with R. Kelly. And I'm just like, R. Kelly was collaborating with a French band in 2013. Like, what was this nigga doing?
He's just placing calls everywhere. Yeah.
Just running across the globe. He's like, I can't work in America anymore.
I don't know. It's just a lot of people have worked with R. Kelly, like we're now realizing. But I thought theirs was like a... Again, it's like we didn't know. I mean, I guess, guys.
I'd like to see a video of like Bugs and Lola Bunny apologizing for working with R. Kelly on the Space Jam soundtrack.
Still in Space Jam.
I know that sucks because that's such a I love
right.
that.
It's in Space Jam. I forgot.
Oh yeah,
that. Yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I Believe I Can Fly was a huge song.
We sang it in middle school.
Yeah,
at graduation.
No, it was like 1998.
Here's my question. How do you feel about listening to the Age Ain't Nothing But a Number album by Aaliyah?
It was very uncomfortable for me this week trying to listen to it because Back and Forth is one of my favorite songs.
Truly top
truly
10
one of my
ever.
Favorite songs.
Yes.
And I love her. And it's also so hard because when you want to listen to Aaliyah, that is literally the only album available.
Yes.
Like on streaming services.
On streaming. You cannot listen to One in a Million. You cannot listen to Rock the Boat.
Yeah, like, good luck finding Rock the Boat.
Yeah.
It's not on this planet.
So it's hard. It's hard.
Right.
Especially like looking at the album cover and he's just in the background leering at her.
Yeah.
And he pipes in on Back and Forth too, and now listening to the actual song Age Ain't Nothing But a Number. I need a minute.
I had forgotten how much of that album is about her being in Jeeps. It's like, you're 14 years old. You are lying. You're not driving anything.
Are you down with the click?
Did you guys see there was I think the story had already been out, but it was sort of like resurfaced. When Destiny's Child, when they were like 16, so they were really young when they were like 16, R. Kelly invited them to the studio and then like out to a club. And Miss Tina and Matthew were like, hell fucking no. And like probably saved them from being wife number two.
I never need Matthew Knowles to be the moral center of any story.
Matthew Knowles was a good manager. Not husband, I don't know, but he was like he managed
father
the,
questionable.
He managed the shit out of Destiny's Child, but it was like a moment of those two, which is not to say that other people are bad parents, but it was like crazy to think that like he was just really trying this with lots of teenagers.
That's the official no part one right there.
Kanye, of course, had to weigh in.
And Kim, Cancel and Gretel themselves.
Well, Kim always has to weigh in because Kanye weighs in, and she has to always go on social media.
Kim's
and
in
play
the other
damage
room
control.
In that empty home of theirs.
That house is so fucking big.
It's, there's nothing in it
but cameras.
Cancelvania, is that where they live?
and satchels of gold.
Jesus.
For Chris McDuck to swim in.
Oh, God.
Kanye argued that art should be separated from the artist. And though he didn't directly reference R. Kelly, he said they're just going to pull up full documentaries on him. Then they're going to come with the Michael Jackson documentary. We can all enjoy their music all we want. I thought I wasn't going to go there today. If we're going to tear down artists, let's go ahead and take Da Vinci out the Louvre while we're at it. Let's take down all the art.
What did Leonardo da Vinci do?
Also, we're jumping right to the Mona Lisa.
What did Leonardo da Vinci do?
I don't know, but if he did...
Does he know something we don't know?
If he did some shit, I'm pretty sure all of Leonardo da Vinci's victims are dead.
Could be.
I don't think there's anyone going to the Louvre and being
triggered
by Da Vinci.
Right.
What did Kim... Because then Kim tried to backtrack and lie.
She said, I'm going to nip this in the bud right now.
Oh, please don't.
Kanye was speaking about his own experience of everyone quick to say they are canceling him because of differences in opinion and not being perfect. The analogies were in context to his own experiences, not defending anyone else.
Girl...
Also, not true. He was like, stop canceling these people just because. That has nothing to do with his experience.
What Kanye documentary is out? Girl, is there a Kanye documentary we don't know about? What are you talking about?
Is he making one?
Right.
There also is a Michael Jackson documentary coming out.
That's actually going to be... The Michael Jackson kind of reckoning is going to be wild because Michael Jackson is someone who I think universally... is accepted as a genius. His music is so integral to pop culture. Like every pop artist that came after him was doing an extended Michael Jackson impression. And it is like, are people going to stop playing Michael Jackson's music? I kind of doubt it. It is so ubiquitous. Unlike R. Kelly, it is going to mean something very, very different.
R. Kelly was largely pushed by black media too. You know, like people saw him as a star because he was constantly... on BET, constantly on black magazine covers before he even had the big 98 crossover.
Yeah.
Whereas Michael Jackson achieved global success.
Yeah.
Also, it's not even like I don't see the show The Cosby Show anymore, but that is just a TV show. Like he's not somebody who you just hear his voice in a CVS or whatever. And like, I think rarely a day goes by that I don't hear Michael Jackson. You know what I mean? So it's just, that would be a serious cultural shift again if he was completely eliminated.
Yeah.
I remember when this shit about Quentin Tarantino came out and I saw all these people on Twitter, and obviously Quentin Tarantino is not, you know, touching whoever. And all these people were like, well, his movie sucked anyway. And it's like, listen, you liked his movies at some point. Like this sort of, this trying to rewrite history where you're like, Quentin Tarantino, his movies are bad now because he did bad things to me, is like, it's disingenuous. And I think it's just against the truth. And I don't think it's the way that we can like move forward with this shit. Like you can't act like Harvey Weinstein was not a part of making great films. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not like, wow, that movie's shitty now. It is still a good movie. It now, unfortunately, is tied to a very bad person. But I do think rewriting the history of like, this is bad now, consuming it, is it bad? Perhaps, like that's a different argument. But I think being like, these things are bad now because we don't like these people. I would say the same thing about The Cosby Show. The Cosby Show is incredible television. I loved The Cosby Show. I cannot say that I did not love The Cosby Show because we know that he's a monster. But like, you know, like that's just not true. And like us sort of dealing in not reality is not helpful to anything.
I preferred the Cosby Mysteries.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. I forgot all about those.
It was a good show.
Or the show Cosby.
Or his second one. Yeah.
Yes.
Co-starring Madeline Kahn.
Or Ghost Dad.
Don't say Ghost Dad to me.
Ghost Dad.
It's too early.
Ghost Dad was that girl.
I bet it wasn't.
Have you seen it?
No. However, he's in, what's that Neil Simon movie? California Suite. And
oh, goodness,
I like him in that
movie.
They're
doing this again.
Yeah.
I also saw an interesting tweet where someone said, well, I don't know if it was interesting. It was funny. But they were like, separating the art from the artist is hard to do when the artist is singing about his crimes, which is what the argument with R. Kelly was.
Oh, sure.
True.
So, like, I thought that was an interest. Like, he has been talking about singing about gross shit for a long time.
And playgrounds and all sorts of shit. Whereas the creepy Michael Jackson songs were never good. Anybody at home listening to You Are Not Alone?
I was gonna say, or the music video for Childhood. Like, you can, right. you might never see that.
No one wants that.
It almost feels like R. Kelly was taunting everyone with his, you know what I mean? Like, oh, you're trying to pull me down, or you're saying I did this shit. I'm just gonna double down on this vibe now that you can't touch me, which I don't know that that's like the argument to listen or not listen to people. I don't know that that's how we should be evaluating shit, but it was a tweet that made me chuckle and pause.
Also, we know that R. Kelly is currently living in Trump Tower in Chicago, right?
I mean, of course he is. Like, Jesus Christ.
I know. I mean, fill in the Mad Lib. Yeah.
With just eating Wendy's and McDonald's.
You know what I mostly can't get over in that picture? Just what he considers a photogenic look. He stands with his arms out. I said this
in
on Twitter.
A big-ass overcoat?
Yes.
Inside?
The look on his face is, it's 50% off at a carpeting store. That's what he's going for. That's the grandeur of his appearance.
Someone wondered if Trump was wearing that big overcoat in this the dinner photo where he served Wendy's and McDonald's to
the Clemson
Tigers,
the national championship team.
If he's wearing this big overcoat because he thinks it's slimming to him, or if it's actually just like cold in the White House because he's too cheap to turn on the heat,
or he doesn't know he's inside because he has
too.
Dementia.
Right.
That
there's
too.
That. Also, slimming. Oh, yeah. You look just like Ben Whishaw in that slick London trench.
Waiting for Mary Poppins to come back.
Oh, God. That movie was not my fave.
Wow. All right.
We took a real departure from R. Kelly, guys. Our producer is looking at us like she stepped out of the room and there was a R. Kelly conversation happening. And now Mary Poppins.
All right. I think we've had enough here.
I know.
When we're back, we're going to talk about everyone's favorite politician, Tulsi Gabbard. Welcome back to Pod Save America. I'm Jon Favreau.
I'm Tommy Vietor.
Oh, I kind of wanted to be the concerned Tommy Vietor who clutches the table and seems very conscientious, but I'll be wisecracking Jon Lovett. I don't care.
But, Louis, if I'm Tommy Vietor, you can look at me.
That's true.
You can't
okay.
look at yourself if you're Tommy Vietor.
Like I'm Penn Badgley on you now? Tommy's a nice person. I ain't yearning over here.
Have you even started watching you?
No, I have to say I'm very entertained by tweets of people discovering you though, because they cannot believe it.
You know who I just was? I was with Jenny Han, author of To All the Boys I Loved Before, and she was like, I started watching it because you and Ira wouldn't stop tweeting about it.
Does she love it?
I mean, I don't think she's far enough in it yet, but like it's funny because now so many people, when they start watching it, they're documenting watching it. And everyone is going on the same wild ride that we went on.
My phone is just blowing up with texts from friends. Like, I'm watching it, just all caps.
It's happening.
It's also very funny seeing Penn Badgley push against, I guess, the adoration for his character. He's like, this is not okay. Please don't. You know?
Yeah, he's tweeting at people, please stop saying that you love Joe. He's a murderer.
Spoiler.
Like, he could murder me.
Oh, God. Oh,
but he could.
The internet, haven't we already done this pose a couple of times? Let's move on from choke me, murder me, etc.
Tulsi Gabbard is running for president. Friday night, Democratic representative from Hawaii's 2nd District, Tulsi, announced that she plans to run for president in 2020 along with 700 other clowns.
It is a fucking sweepstakes.
And they all did it like in the same 2 weeks.
And they're all Instagramming themselves very annoyingly.
They're all trying to like jack AOC's swag. And like, it looks weird. Like, Elizabeth Warren, don't nobody want to see you Instagram live in your kitchen?
With a beer?
With a beer, like, because we know you're just copying a young person who did it.
Right.
That's all you're doing.
No, also, like, when she says she watches Ballers, it's like, right, that's the exact cool level I want from you.
Right.
Which is not that cool.
I don't want it any cooler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Beto Instagramming his mouth.
Oh, right.
While he's at the dentist. What the fuck is wrong with these people?
Anyway. Yeah, what did we learn from that? Is this the magic school bus?
Actually,
I don't want to go down your throat.
I'm voting for the one person who doesn't Instagram live their life. That's who my next president will be.
Oh, gosh. Good luck.
Anyway, this Democrat who wants to run for president has been stirring up some controversy online. She is a 37-year-old Iraq war veteran who once touted the anti-LGBTQ group the Alliance for Traditional Marriage. Literally sounds like an alias villain.
It sounds so like something Tipper Gore would have headed in 1983, you know, evil and buttoned up.
It was a group that spent more than $100,000 to lobby for an amendment that reserved marriage to opposite sex couples. And it described homosexuality as unhealthy, abnormal behavior that should not be promoted or accepted in society.
You got it, sweetie, as I smack my own ass. Moving on.
Maybe she has a point.
That's what I'm saying.
Anyway, when she was running for a seat in the Hawaii State Legislature in 2002, she cited her work for the Alliance, and the Alliance also actively supported gay conversion therapy. And,
which, if you know science, works.
Right. And in 2004, she also fought a bill that would have legalized same-sex marriage in Hawaii. Anyway.
What's she saying now?
She's running for president, so clearly she got some apologies. She said, first, let me say that I regret these positions I took in the past and the things that I said. I'm grateful for those in the LGBTQ plus community who have shared their aloha with me throughout my personal journey.
She means the movie.
Emma Stone.
Thank you for showing me that.
I'm sorry.
Over the past 6 years in Congress, I have been fortunate to have had the opportunity to help work towards passing legislation that ensures equal rights and protections on LGBTQ plus issues, such as the Equality Act, the repeal of DOMA, blah, 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 whatever. She probably bought Glory on iTunes, too.
That's right.
Anyway, Twitter has been driving me crazy because now we are embroiled in a conversation of, didn't all Democrats used to be anti-gay at some point? And bringing up the fact that in 2008, Obama said, I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. I am not in favor of gay marriage. And Hillary Clinton saying, marriage has got historic, religious, and moral content that goes back to the beginning of time. And I think it's between a man and a woman in 2000. Listen. That shit is not conversion therapy.
Right,
no,
I was
going
to say, it's like, and that was like, it's again, one of those things that we look back on and you're like, this was not okay. But there was this prevailing sort of idea about marriage in particular, which is not at all the same as this shit that this woman was doing.
And also she claimed she was dogged by homosexual extremists, just fully calling us like zealots.
Yeah, and like
Carly Rae Jepsen fan.
Like Barack Obama was not a part of a group whose only goal was to stop this. Was like not what these other people were doing.
Gay teenagers who go through conversion therapy kill themselves.
Yeah.
Like this is a big difference. I think that 2020 is really going to be the year of politicians trying to rebrand themselves now.
Yeah.
And I think that rebranding yourself may work if you're Joe Biden and you want us to forget about that Anita Hill shit.
Right.
But if you are supporting conversion therapy, like, no, bitch, I'm not supporting you.
I also, like, it in other years, right? Like, you sort of understand this, like, all of these people who were never going to be president, ever, who are running, that it's, like, to increase their notoriety. Like, that's a, you know, they're, like, trying to raise their profile. And so they run for president, and they get a book deal and whatever, and they know good and goddamn well they're not going to be president, but it is to become, like, more well-known politicians.
In 2020, Carly Fiorina has a cabaret off Broadway.
But like in 2020, for me, it's like, this shit is serious. Like, we don't have time for this bullshit. Like, this is not the year for all of you to try to become more famous or whatever the fuck. Like, we need some real shit. We need real people running, not this clown bullshit. We don't need everyone jumping in. Like, we need to get serious about who the fuck is going to run for president, because we need Donald Trump to not be president anymore. So this year in particular, this like clown car of people rolling up saying that they're running for president, I find very irritating and honestly borderline irresponsible.
I do. And I also want to say that there are ways to defend Barack and Hillary without some of the insanity that I've seen with some people tweeting. We all know that Barack was really just lying because, you know, it wasn't good to publicly support gay marriage back then. I'm like, listen, I don't care if he was lying. I don't care if he actually meant it then. I'm glad that he changed his opinion later on. But it's also like, I'm not going to say that it's okay.
Yeah, no.
You know, like, you don't have to create hoops.
And I doubt he would say it was okay. I mean, if you asked him, I don't think he would be like, that was a fine opinion to have. I bet he would express or has expressed regret for having that opinion. So it's like, you don't even know that that's what he's thinking.
Also, by the way, I remember distinctly in 2012 when it was Michelle Obama who gave the speech that she said something, it was the DNC, I think, indicated that she was for gay marriage. And I remember that being so kind of shocking, you know, like, oh, wow, they're actually going public with this. So let's not pretend it was even that long ago that it was unsurprising that a Democratic candidate would say these things. So we are still, I feel I am still recovering from how awful that was. You know what I mean? I don't think we should roll over that.
It was that Robin Roberts interview when they sat down. That was like the moment when they sat and he was like, I am now in support of gay marriage. And they got Robin up in there looking great as always.
Just always looking fly.
Just looking good. Like, this bitch is like, I beat cancer how many times?
Right. She looks like she does a jaunty jog in the
morning. I literally was about to say, the jauntiest woman. Rarely you describe a woman as jaunty. Thank God we have her. Katharine Hepburn and Robin Roberts.
But who is the other politician? I feel like now it's just politicians inundating us. I mean, with their bullshit constantly, that's all they're doing. But like even more so, because now we've got fucking
Scaramucci is back.
Scoop.
Anthony Scaramucci is back. Oh,
yeah.
The Mooch.
Scoo.
Scoo. I hate him.
He's gonna be on your favorite TV show.
I listen. So Celebrity Big Brother is back. And
the Peabody winning Celebrity Big Brother.
Scaramucci is joining the Celebrity Big Brother house.
Did you also, by the way, see like the fake lists of people that were supposed to be on the show that turned out to be wrong? For a while, I had believed that Sean Spicer was going to be in the house. So in a way, I'm already deadened to this news. Like, I was prepared for it to be even somehow worse.
What is Sean Spicer doing? Man, that is a name I have forgotten about, fortunately.
He's interning here at Crooked Media.
He's got great ideas.
He's running for president.
This is obviously Scaramucci's own attempt to politically reinvent himself, because he saw how it worked for Omarosa.
But Omarosa, like...
But it didn't really work.
Omarosa was also there for longer than 10 days.
True.
Right.
I don't know if she had a real job. He had more of a real job than her. But, like, Omarosa was also a name we already recognized.
Yeah.
Like, Omarosa, we already knew who she was. She was there for a minute. Like, dude, nobody knew who you were. You were there for a hot blink of an eye. And that,
you fucked up in record time.
Yeah, like, there's no reinvention.
There's also the
idea...
You're
the FloJo of fucking up.
There's just the idea... I love his nails. There's also the idea that Omarosa going to Celebrity Big Brother was her going back to what she should be doing in the first place.
Right.
Being on reality TV. This is like, no one wants to see you.
I would... Like, if you walked...
You're trash and you tried to get me fired.
If you walked down the street and you had a picture of this man, nobody could identify him.
Yeah, I don't think so either. But by the way, this cast list is disturbing in a couple of ways. When I'm looking and I'm worried for Candy Burris, because Dina Lohan is in that house. Kato Kaelin, who is a parody of somebody who would get selected for the show. He literally is just known for being a witness in the OJ thing. That was, I believe, 24 years ago.
Not even a useful witness.
No. He had Brad Pitt-esque hair. That is what we remember about him. And he gets in the house. I'm just saying, Candy Burris has a Grammy.
I know. What is she? And she has money.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't have, like, silly, like, non-Beverly Hills housewife money. Like, this bitch has real cash. What are you doing, girl?
And also talent.
And so, yeah, go write a song.
I'm worried.
She never turns down a check. Never. Never.
Tamar's in the house. That's also crazy.
Lolo Jones.
And then now do you think, so when Omarosa was on Big Brother, she was doing her, like, dropping Trump secret shit. Like, don't you think he's going to try? He doesn't have anything else. Right? Like, he has no other personality or role.
What did you learn in 15 days?
Right. Like,
also, by the way, that actually throws into sharp relief how Omarosa, in her own way, again, scamstress, obviously, like, waving a finger in the camera like, you don't know what I know. This guy is so helplessly guileless, I feel like he'll just spill it all in 10 minutes to Jonathan Bennett, the guy from Mean Girls.
What if the mooch is the reason Donald Trump gets brought down? Because on Big Brother, he throws
really
down the receipts.
Some shit.
Yeah.
And Julie Chen Moonves raises an eyebrow at the camera and says, how about that?
Well, she's gone,
but first,
right?
Nope, she's back for Big Brother.
Oh, so she just quit the talk.
Correct.
Yes.
Girl,
which is an interesting situation, because on Big Brother, she actually does control the conversation. So it's an interesting move on
her
part.
Every night she's going to be like, I'm Julie Chen Moonves, and okay, shoot it the other
well,
time.
Well, I hope it's like that.
Yeah,
yes.
Just like that. Just
which
like that.
Is wild to me, because now knowing everything that's come out about Les,
yeah,
it's just like, are you really going to be up on CVS being all...
Well, you know what? Because he didn't get his $60 million, so she's got to go back to work.
I would also lean the other way if I were Julie Chen. I would just call myself some other name and just hope that caught on. Hi, it's me, Julia Brune.
Hi, it's Juliette Binoche.
Good night.
Again, we took a wild turn in this conversation.
Imagine staying on the topic of Scaramucci, though.
Well, that's not where we started. We started with Tulsi.
Oh, that's true.
Tulsi Gullah Gullah Island.
I look forward to her on Celebrity Big Brother.
Right. Stabbing Ross Matthews.
Right. Honestly, they're going to be able to do an entire Celebrity Big Brother that's just 2020 presidential candidates.
Oh, yeah.
Failed 2020 presidential candidates.
What if 2020 is actually just a season of Drag Race?
Oh, sure.
Beto walks in the room, in the workroom.
Let's
I'm
get
back.
Sickening.
Also, yes. 2020 is so far away. Dear God.
I know. It's so, I just can't.
2019 just started.
I know.
We haven't had any time to be disappointed in it yet.
Kamala Harris is running, too.
Kirsten, yeah.
Who is, yeah,
Joe Brand.
I'm already tired.
There's too many names.
I would say. Truly every Democrat I have heard of.
Like, honestly, almost.
Like, Cher's gonna run.
Lady Gaga's gonna run just so she can give
wait
a speech.
Wait till Howard Schultz. Then you're gonna get, like, our version of Donald Trump. Like, Howard Schultz is gonna come out here and run. Like, we got a long, long road.
Well, I can't wait to see what Tommy says about our Pod Save America segment.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We'll get that critique.
It is weird how we do ultimately crave his approval, even though we pretend he's just a nice fan. Anyway.
Yeah, a nice fan who's bad at trivia.
Oh, that's right. He can recover from
you
that.
You have other skills, Tommy. It's fine.
When we're back, we'll be joined by Nina Parker of E! News. We are back with The queen of media herself. The queen of
E. No, don't give me that. Don't give me that title.
You have taken over E. Nina Parker.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Hello, hello.
Yes. Listen, I used to love all of the Love and Hip Hop reunions that you hosted.
Okay, good.
And now you are on E, hosting Nightly Pop.
Yes.
You were also on E! News.
I'm on E! News, yes.
You have a new show coming out.
Yes. Dating No Filter.
Yes. So... you talk about pop culture on E.
Yes.
I know that you are, listen, we are tapped out too. We talked about R. Kelly again today. But we are going to talk about a Kevin Hart movie, not necessarily him. Because there's nothing else to say about Kevin Hart.
Kevin Hart adjacent.
You know, you'd think that, and yet every day, something else again.
He drops a new interview.
Yes.
Have you seen the posters around L.A.? I was driving, I was about to turn onto Sunset near the Chateau, and there was a poster that said the Oscars have no heart with a picture of Kevin Hart's face. I was like, what is that even?
Okay.
What, like?
When do they have a heart?
Right.
They've been operating fine without one.
I was like, who's printing up these posters and pasting them around Los Angeles?
Also, by the way, this is also what Nicole Kidman movie? So crazy.
Oh, yeah. So,
what is happening?
All right. The Upside, starring Bryan Cranston, Kevin Hart, and Nicole Kidman. A remake of the French film The Untouchables. It recently came under fire for Bryan Cranston playing a man with quadriplegia. Anyway, it's a movie about a wheelchair-bound billionaire who hires a former convict to be his caretaker.
This happens a lot of the time.
Right.
There's a great article on Vulture about this movie that we can link to. But they go into basically, because this was a Weinstein company film. And the Yeah, it was a Weinstein company film. And so it was this whole thing where obviously that sort of threw it. They were getting the movie made. It was a whole thing. It was a Weinstein film, which fucked everything up. And then Kevin Hart was also promoting Jumanji at the same time. So it was this whole thing where he couldn't promote this film. Mm-hmm. Harvey Weinstein was like, I'm going to make him. Basically, he contractually was not allowed to promote this film. And Harvey Weinstein was like, I can figure it out. And then we know what happened there. And then, then the Kevin Hart stuff. So this movie has just had, hit after hit after hit. And the filmmaker is like, this really sucks, guys. We did not see this coming.
This January release lets you know.
Exactly.
They're just trying to bury this thing.
So in defense of his portrayal, Cranston was like, as actors, we're asked to play other people. If I, as a straight older person, and I'm wealthy, I'm very fortunate, does that mean I can't play a person who is not wealthy? Does that mean I can't play a homosexual? But he does think that the subject is worthy of debate and that more opportunities should be given to actors who are disabled.
I just want to say how buffoonishly late I am to realizing this is a problem. Because for years, I'm thinking about just notable... disabled roles and stuff.
Right.
And the first one I thought of was Laura Innes as Dr. Weaver on ER. And at the time I would have said to you, oh, this is a diverse show. See, there's a lot of black cast members. There's an Asian cast member. And they have a character who's disabled. Meanwhile, of course she is not disabled in real life. Just for some reason, I feel like we gave ourselves a pass for years and years to think if there's a character who's disabled, that somehow is representational when in fact, obviously it isn't. So anyway, we're stupid was my point.
Where do we think this is on the spectrum of representation in Hollywood?
I have to be honest, I didn't think about it in the frame of, when I think about diversity, I think I always think of gender and I think of race.
Mm-hmm.
I never thought to associate it with, someone being in a wheelchair or someone being disabled. I never even really thought about that. But I think that's I think we're all entitled in our own ways. Entitlement doesn't just mean one lane. Some people are entitled with education. It can be in different ways. And I think maybe in that way, some of us are entitled because that's not in our scope. We may not have any family members that are disabled. So we just don't even think about it. And so when I started to think about it, I'm like, this is a great point. And I saw this story last week of a bridal store that, they do the bride dresses in the window, and one of them they put in a wheelchair. And there were so many women who had gotten married who were disabled in wheelchairs who had these emotional reactions to seeing this in the window because they had never seen that before. And I think there are certain groups that just get used to the norm of never being represented. Mm. And so I think that there has to be some type of opening into these industries because I think it's Hollywood pulls from the same pools of people for years and years and years. And then a new group comes in and they pull from that same small pool. You just have to have more people that are out there looking for these talents because they exist.
Yeah. You know, I desperately wish we were having this conversation not about this movie because, like, you know, you're just like, oh, this is the one.
Ain't nobody trying to see it.
Right. It's just like, why is this the movie? But, you know, I think the thing that, and this is not a new idea or opinion, but I think it's really about it cutting both ways. So it's like, it is fine for a straight person to play a gay person, but you need to let gay people play straight people. For example, like when you're shooting a movie, there are a lot of constraints and things that come up where maybe having this person be disabled makes something unfeasible to shoot, which okay. But when you have a movie where it isn't unfeasible to shoot, then you should get someone who's actually disabled. So I think part of the problem, and I think this came up when they were talking about trans actors, where they're like, listen, you can have people that are not trans play trans people, but you don't let trans people not play trans people.
Right.
And so if we're at a point where it truly is an open call for everyone and we're letting everyone audition for things and we're giving everyone that opportunity, I do think that the reaction to seeing someone like Bryan Cranston play this role would be different because you would feel like we're kind of working with like an even playing field.
And it's always weird how the conversation comes back to, well, are there any famous people in wheelchairs who could play this role? It's Steven Spielberg is doing the West Side Story reboot.
Right.
And they have like Ansel Elgort and Rita Moreno in roles, but
Ansel Elgort is going to be in West Side Story?
He's playing Tony.
Okay.
Yep. Cancel
keep,
Elgort.
Keep going. Keep going.
You know he's one of my white kings.
Oh, God. Okay.
But they cast like a virtual unknown after doing a casting call to play Maria.
Yeah.
So you have to have a famous person in the movie, someone like an Ansel or something, to sell it internationally, sell it in America. Mm-hmm. Sure. You can also cast an unknown, really good, like, disabled actor to play this role. You know, you already had, like, the Kevin Hart role. You have, like, Nicole Kidman in the movie. You know, you didn't need it to be Bryan Cranston.
Mm-hmm. I bet Bryan Cranston wishes it wasn't Bryan Cranston right about now.
That is interesting, though, because, like, for instance, on Breaking Bad, his son really had cerebral palsy. Or, like, on that show Speechless, like, the son has a disability, too. The mom on that show is Minnie Driver. So it's interesting how we get the authenticity as long as there's a celeb quotient otherwise.
Right.
That kid from Stranger Things is going to play the Elephant Man. And somebody who actually has that disorder didn't get an audition to play it. And that's super interesting because if a celebrity is playing that part, you can't tell it's the celebrity. So why not just have somebody, you know, who has the fucking thing? You know, it's really interesting that still celebrities get, you know, the lead in that universe.
I have never seen The Elephant Man.
Can I tell you something? Holds up. Excellent movie.
I haven't seen it since I had to watch it in school.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I watched it. That's how I saw it. But I was really young. I was way too young to understand the concept. My teacher clearly wanted to catch up on some things during class because we watched this when I was like 10 years old. And we were all like, what is happening?
I prefer the Iceman, you know?
Oh, sure.
Cometh.
Or Mask.
Yeah.
With Cher.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Oh, not The Mask?
No. Oh, Cameron Diaz. When she was 21, she really had it going on.
I just said that because Iceman rhymed with Elephant Man.
I'm going to say, you're a brilliant
comic. It didn't rhyme. It's the same word. It's not a rhyme when it's the same word. Can't rhyme the word with the same word.
All right. Tell that to Nicki Minaj.
I would love to. I would love to.
All right. While I take the pink Lamborghini to race with China, took the race to China just to race with China.
Girl, that is not a rhyme.
China is a fun word to say like that, though. I kind of don't blame her.
Yeah. Nina,
yes.
What is it like for you having frank conversations like this on E! And stuff?
It's good. I mean, you know, for me, I've always just been kind of known. For people who don't know, I got my start on TMZ. So I was on TMZ for 5 years, and it really kind of helped hone, like, me tapping into, like, my real conversations and being able to challenge people because it was oftentimes me against the room. Mm-hmm. I was the only Black woman there. So I very early in my television career learned how to kind of defend myself and my point of view in a very real and frank way. So I was able to kind of take that kind of rawness to everywhere that I go, because sometimes people say, oh, you're going there, you're going to do this. And I think people think because you have to be one way when you're reporting on things. But, you know, Black folks love the tea. So it's like, we love entertainment. We love gossip. We love that juicy, you know, entertainment gossip, what's happening behind the scenes. And oftentimes there's a lack of representation. So people feel like, well, this show isn't for me, you know, or they're not covering things that I care about. And so what I really hope to bring was a different aspect of like, you know, we can still be talking about these mainstream issues and still bring like a realness to it that we would talk about Angelina Jolie and Brad splitting as we would with people on Love and Hip Hop. Because it's the same kind of drama, you know, just because they're worth millions of dollars doesn't take away from the fact that there was some really weird, foul things going on, you know?
Serious question for you. How worried for your safety were you during those Love and Hip Hop? Because I would always be like, get her out of there. I was like, get me out of there.
I'm from the Bay Area, so I wasn't worried at all.
So you weren't worried.
Okay.
No, I have a Bay Area upbringing.
Like, she was there.
My reflexes are quick. This is like a family reunion
you
to me.
You would get up real quick.
Yeah. Oh, well, also, like, I have other jobs. You know what I mean? Like, I have other jobs, so this I'm not going to put everything, you know, down the toilet to flex on somebody here and then not be able to work anywhere else the next Monday. And also, people have to realize, like, my bosses are there. You know, like, a lot of these stars, like, this is like their bread and butter. They do the show, and that's it, and they can act a fool. Like, I have other things to do.
Right.
So it's like, my bosses are here. EPs are here. Like, I'm just not going to do that. And I don't really have a dog in the fight, you know, either. So I'm just like, oh, okay, y'all want to fight? I'm not going to stop you. But I'm a backup.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, you know, this beat don't get messed up or, you know, wig don't get askew. Just handle your business. I'll come back in after.
Do you watch, though, reunion specials of other shows and, like, critique the people hosting them? Because there is, like, a real art to doing it well, to, like, bringing the most out of those people and to kind of keep the drama between them.
No, because I critique myself. So this is going to be a whole other conversation. But, like, I was seeing everybody come for Alexa Shipp on Twitter. And I kind of, I felt bad because I know sometimes she does put her foot in her mouth, but I know what it feels like to have people like scrutinize you for an art or something that you really appreciate. And you're just like, oh, like this just didn't come out the right way. So I don't watch, if I watch, I watch for pleasure and enjoyment and like any other person, but never really to critique. I don't really critique other hosts because everybody has their own lane and the way that they do things. And you know, it's all really geared to your personality. And also production plays a big part in how you host, because I feel like on the Love and Hip Hop reunions, I'm the least myself on camera because there's so much going on and there's so many other hands involved, invested in it, that I kind of have to be very technical. So you never know what like is happening behind the scenes, which a lot of people don't think about when they're watching, that there's like a whole network, there's a whole booth of people talking, there's stuff that's cut out. So it's hard to judge from a production standpoint.
If you could, for one night only, replace Andy Cohen for a Housewives reunion.
I was literally about
which
to
city?
Ask,
yeah,
which
city?
Beverly
which city?
Hills. Beverly Hills. I love, that's my favorite cast. I love to hate them. It is like, oh, I love Beverly Hills. That's my favorite cast of all of the shows. So I definitely would do that.
My favorite thing about Beverly Hills is that they're all actually rich.
Right. Yes.
Like, oh, yeah,
that. Money.
They all got, like, some of them in New York, like, a lot of them in New York do too.
Yes.
But, like, in Beverly Hills, you're like, oh, these bitches are actually very
Lisa
rich.
Lisa Vanderpump's house, her closet.
Yeah. Guys, I was just in Vegas, I was telling them earlier, and I am standing in the after the Celine show in the lobby of Caesar's Palace, and I see a sign
Vanderpump
coming to Vegas.
Yes.
I cannot wait.
They're opening some sort of cocktail garden.
Yes.
I believe that's what it was called at Caesar's Palace. God help us all.
Yes.
Truly.
I just like her restaurants are already tacky. I can't wait to see what Vegas
Caesar's
tacky
Palace.
Is.
Yes. Yes. She actually is good friends with the guy who owns Planet Hollywood. He owns a bunch of different casinos and restaurants. I forget his name, but she's really good friends with him.
So Mr. Hollywood.
yes. So she has all these, I mean, Lisa's connections are long. Like if they think that they're going to overthrow her from anything, got another, her money and connections are long.
Lisa.
Yeah.
Lisa Van
So I would love to do. I would sit in the audience. That I would rarely sit in the audience for a reunion show because they're so long, and I know how it goes. I would sit in the audience for the Beverly Hills.
That's like several hours, right?
Oh,
you're just taping.
Well, for us, we tape a 14-hour day.
Ooh,
I tape for 14 hours.
Ooh.
Yeah, I tape the full 2 hours in one sitting, and I get in. I think my call time is like 8 a.m. and I don't leave till 2 a.m.
Oh, girl.
My God.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
you
a
can
long
sue.
Day.
Yeah. Get out of there if you have to.
It's a long day.
You're on E. Anything you're looking forward to this award season? Like things that have been really fun for you to sort of report and comment on?
Well, Grammys is always fun because it's, you know, most of the award season is acting. So you're kind of seeing the same people once you do Golden Globes, Critics' Choice, SAGs, and then Oscars. You're kind of seeing the same people. Grammys is also, like, really fun because the outfits are obviously different. It's not as stiff. It's just, you know, there's music. So you have all different types of people. People coming with the entourage. It's just a whole different kind of moment to kind of people watch. So I really enjoy reporting on the Grammys and kind of seeing what people are doing. And I don't feel like I know a lot about music, as you know, I can talk about what they're doing on the carpet, but so it's always fun learning experience for me as well, because I feel like I'm really bad at updating my iTunes, so this is like my moment to like get on board with what the cool kids are doing, because I'm still listening to Scorpion.
Man, this award season is long. I'm like, we still got a bunch of stuff coming.
It's a long weeks.
They just announced Alicia Keys' house in the Grammys.
Yeah. I know.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Makeup free, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, that'll be interesting to see. I feel like Alicia is a little self-righteous sometimes, so I'm not sure how this hosting thing is going to go.
I'm going to say she's also extremely nice.
Yes.
Whereas, like, I feel like a host should have a little bit of a sinister streak, you know?
So for hosting a show. But, you know, LL did it for so many years, and he was always super nice. So I sometimes feel like the host for the Grammys is kind of like they come in to announce, and then they leave, and then everybody else comes out and does, like, the wild stuff.
Yeah, nobody expects the host of the Grammys to do, like, a musical medley at the beginning or anything.
Which is ironic, because it's the Grammys. Right. This is where it's time to do the musicals, but they don't do them.
Also, this year, I want to say in the main categories, there are now, like, 8 nominees apiece. Already, everybody has too many Grammys. So I'm already concerned about too many nominations being handed out.
But then how many are at the Oscars? It's, like, 12 damn nominees
now. In the Best Picture.
I'm like, that is...
Yeah. Is Gaga nominated?
For Grammys?
For something?
I don't think they've announced
like, will she show up just to give a speech about A Star Is Born?
Oh, did she have a new album? Well, she must be she's nominated for A Star Is Born, for sure. Like, Shallow is nominated at the Grammys.
Okay. Well, then she'll win for that.
Oh, did the nominations come out? Oh, mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
I didn't even know they came out.
So she'll be there.
I don't know what happens at the Grammys. What are the Grammys? Anyway, Mia, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you guys for having me. Yes. Yeah. And Dating No Filter comes out next Monday. If you guys just need to watch us kiki and talk about these crazy dates, you guys live here, so you know how crazy dating is in LA, and it really just echoes that madness. So we can all watch and be lonely and sarcastic together. Yeah,
the feeling of sitting on your couch.
Exactly.
Swiping left.
Yes.
Swiping right.
It's exactly
feeling
that.
Feeling like you'll die alone.
And we're there just to make it a little fun for everyone.
Yeah, great. When we're back, keep it. And we're back. It's time for Keep It.
It is.
Kara, go ahead.
My Keep It is to the hashtag 10-year challenge. If you don't know, and I don't know how you could not know, because everyone is doing this fucking challenge, it is just posting a picture of yourself from this year, 2009, which, by the way, 2019, which just started. So how many pictures of yourself could you possibly already have?
They're all photos of people from 2018.
Exactly. And then a picture of you from 2009. And it's like, look, that was me 10 years ago. Here I am now. That is the extent of this. Not a challenge, first of all.
If you can't fulfill the challenge, something is
and
off.
Unless there's ice falling on you.
Right,
and
exactly.
Freezing.
And for me, unless you're Kylie Jenner, this shit isn't that surprising. Hers is the only 10-year challenge where, like, wow, that's a fully different human being. Like, everyone looks better now because we've all discovered Instagram and beauty blenders and beards and skincare. Everyone looks better now. That's the surprise. That's it. That's the challenge. That's all we've got.
It is pretty crazy looking at photos from 10 years ago, though, how bad photos looked. Like, because you would often have to physically scan them. Just, like, it's crazy.
Yeah,
what
it's
we did.
Just, it's like you took it with a digital camera, and now our iPhones are just full on computers in our hands. That's the biggest revelation of the 10-year challenge.
It's just like being reminded that every white gay in 2009 used too much bronzer and had that same skinny scar from H&M.
I would say, and also lots of jewel toned Express for Men shirts.
Yes!
You know? You wore, like, an emerald green shirt out for a night. And I say you looked like everybody looked like, whose line is it anyway, panelists?
I miss the real challenges, you know, like the ice bucket challenge. That was hard-ish. harder than this. You
and
had
allegedly
to,
you donated something.
Yeah, yeah. You had to donate. You
it
had
is
to
hard.
Fill up a bucket of ice.
I never That's have ice in my apartment.
I'm saying, like, you know, the even
it's hard
the,
to find.
Even the In My Feelings challenge required like a little bit more effort
on dancing.
You had to be able to stay on beat. This is just a throwback Thursday.
Yeah.
That's literally all this is.
You could post. My favorite thing, too, is the people who just post a photo of themselves from 2009.
Right.
Instead of, they don't want the comparison. They're just like, look at me back then. I don't actually even have access to those photos anymore. They're somewhere, but I got rid of my Facebook.
I guess I was in. So. I was in college. Yeah. I mean, like, whatever.
So I can't scroll readily.
It's also just been going on for too long. Like, it, right. One day of it's, like, fine, I guess. But now I feel like it's been, like, a few days. And I'm like, still, we're still.
And
still
because
happening.
Of Instagram's shitty algorithm.
Right.
we will continue to see it for 2 weeks.
Right.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
I don't like it. Keep it. It's just, it's, get a real challenge, guys. It's 2019.
Get a real challenge.
Exactly.
Ooh.
Hashtag that, bitch.
Lewis. Lewis have a real keep it challenge.
I'm about to fail it again. Keep it to death, which just took Carol Channing from us. Carol Channing is a 97-year-old Broadway legend. And all I have to say about people who get to be that old is you just don't fucking want some people to die. You just want like the Dick Van Dykes and the Cicely Tysons and the Olivia de Havillands to go on and on because they're so from a bygone era of entertainment, and I don't want all of that to be in the past. But a couple of interesting things about Carol Channing. One, great documentary about her a couple years ago called Larger Than Life, which I recommend. Two, nominated for an Oscar one time. Do you know what for, Ira? You're more of a Broadway gay than I am. I'm surprised you don't know.
Oh, wait. Was it for Hello, Dolly?
It was not Thoroughly Modern Millie. And also, the greatest thing about Carol Channing, other than she is an unforgettable character, like a Celine Dion, full of such inimitable joy, she's the reason Barbra Streisand doesn't have a Tony, because she won for Hello, Dolly over Barbara in Funny Girl, which is historically insane. I mean, awesome.
But. I always forget that she's in Thoroughly Modern Millie, because the only one that really matters is Sutton Foster's.
The only one,
and Harriet Sampson Harris.
That's I love Harriet Harris. Don't have
okay.
That, yeah,
Lewis, I feel like you've done death before. Keep it to death. Well, I feel like this is a repeat.
It's quite sincere. Turns out I was not lying about it.
As if it's coming for you personally.
You never know. Again, I'm 32. The year of Karen Carpenter's death. Weirder things have happened. Illuminati.
I do love Carol Channing though.
Yeah,
she was an octoroon.
Ira, get the fuck out of here. You can't say that in front of white people. That's something we have to say behind closed doors to each other.
Privately. She was
I'll run and hide.
Black.
She was, yes.
Yes. Can we still use that word?
You wonder what's funny?
It's a technical word.
I got an email from someone when I was still at Jezebel. I don't remember what I had been writing about. It must have been about like mixed race people. And this woman emailed me and literally referred to herself as an octoroon and her child, or she was the quadroon and then her child was the octoroon. But like use those words to describe herself. I was like, that's how I know you're lying or you're not actually black. Cause no, but no, like you're making this up. Cause no actual black person is referring to themselves as an octoroon. Now we've said that word like 18 times. Oh God.
The secret password is octoroon.
Oh my God, that should be an SNL sketch, like just password but only words that certain people can say.
Now yeah. You're keep it, Ira.
Oh.
That's where we're at.
I'm still laughing this whole how many times we said octoroon.
Another one. We need to get one of those like ding.
My keep it is for Kara's favorite fast food joint.
No.
Shake Shack.
Go to hell.
I love Shake Shack.
Listen, I love Shake Shack too. My keep it is mainly for Shake Shack's social media person.
Oh God.
Oh, I saw this.
So when Trump had his trash dinner, his candlelit Filet-O-Fish.
Which went cold in, I'm not kidding, 4 minutes.
Yes. I tweeted that he should be impeached just on the basis of him not serving Shake Shack, which is right down the street from the White House.
Yes.
Shake Shack responded to my tweet with, Hit us up if you want a real spread while you're in town, Clemson.
That is actually pretty artfully shady.
And I quoted the tweet with, how the fuck you gonna respond to my tweet with an offer for Clemson on my tweet?
You
fucking clout
that.
Chasers. I want some Shake Shack. I want a Smoke Shack burger.
You know,
I want a chick.
You know what I
apostrophe
had,
in
you know what I had to what I had to do to get free Shake Shack was I wrote about Shake Shack for the LA Review of Books, and it was a
brilliant.
It was like something like a Shake Shack obsession in numbers. It's right after Fred Armisen's piece, and they sent me a gift certificate.
Oh my God, their salted caramel shakes. That's a perfect food.
It is.
Yeah.
So you're mad that that Shake Shack offered to give the group of young men who achieved something Shake Shack and not you for tweeting at them?
Yes.
Okay.
That they hopped into my mentions.
And also, no, by the
you
way,
tweeted at them.
I didn't at Shake
oh,
Shack.
Oh, you didn't at Shake Shack. Okay.
Also, by the way, it's actually extra shady of them because obviously the Clemson team has already had way too much fast food by now. So then you're like, you want more, boys? We're right here.
You want a full spread?
Yeah. Can I say my favorite? There's a video of the guys, like, you know, picking up their Big Macs, and you hear one dude go, "I thought this was a joke." So you know, like, they're pulling up in the bus, and someone's like, "Yo, I heard that they got Filet-O-Fish in there," and they're like, "No, no," and then they walk in, and it's a pile of Filet-O-Fishes.
Some guy there had AirPods.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yes.
The black dude was just like, "I."
I love how Trump, first of all, he tweeted that there were 1,000 hamburgers. He misspelled hamburgers.
I believe that's his first misspelling. I can't believe it.
Because of the government shutdown, that's why he served fast food.
Because they didn't have, like, catering at the White House. Yeah.
But as if the government shutdown closed every restaurant in D.C.
Right. You could.
That's how it works.
Like, was Rocky Rococo's closed, bitch?
What about Ann Pizza? Ooh, that's a D.C. reference for you.
They have a Nando's in D.C.
Why did it have to be a fast food restaurant also is the other question. Why is that who had to cater
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's really crazy. I mean, again, I mean, there's a comedian, I think it's, is it Lori Kilmartin, who tweets about if Hillary were president and the same things Trump were doing were happening. And she said, imagine if Hillary Clinton served fast food for a visiting
team.
It's so crazy.
Imagine if Barack Obama had served goddamn Big Macs at the White House. They would have come for him with pitchforks. They would have burned the White House down if that black man had been serving cold-ass fries to the Clemson Tigers.
Well, if at least I know if Barack served some Big Macs at the White House, they would be warm.
Right. I wanted to see the hot
fresh.
Plate.
They didn't even have hot plates.
Yes.
When the sauces were put
in the gravy.
Into a bowl,
the gravy but
still,
bowl,
but still in their sauce packets.
Oof. I just really feel bad for the staff. I mean, I feel bad for the staff of the White House for a lot of reasons. But, like, you know, they're just thinking of their state dinners. They're thinking of all of just the many meals that they have served to honor great Americans. And they're like, this motherfucker is making us put goddamn sweet and sour sauce in our silver gravy bowls.
Imagine this chapter of the movie The Butler. He's like, I can't believe I have to carry this burger over there.
Do you think someone had to go pick up the McDonald's? Or do you think they, for the White House, they drop it off?
I feel like it's dropped off. I don't know how it gets into the White House, though.
He made Eric do it.
You think so? Oh, yeah.
He made Eric on his little bicycle.
Made Tiffany go get it.
Tiffany works there.
He had to ask someone for her number first, but then he texted it.
Also, Hillary definitely would not have done it. Hillary's dinner would, because she loves to be likable, would have had photos of her, like, cooking up pasta.
Oh, yeah, right.
She would have, like, made
kitchen.
Them dinner, yeah.
She'd be like, I made them home dinner.
Opening a purse full of hot sauce to show everybody.
Also, buddy, like, Donald, supposed billionaires, ain't buying people 100 Big Macs.
Yeah.
You're not really keeping up that charade very well, man.
Filet? Oh, just like, who the fuck eats a Filet-O-Fish?
What were the Wendy's burgers, too? That's what I couldn't see. Because the only thing you should be getting at Wendy's
is a Frosty.
Are a Frosty and the chicken nuggets. Chicken nuggets are good.
I like a chicken sandwich from there. And the fries, if they are golden, I'm into.
Fast food, not even some Taco Bell.
Well, because it's not great American food.
That's right.
True.
That was his whole thing.
True. Great.
French fries.
French fries?
He didn't even call them freedom fries.
Taco Bell, the most Americanized.
I know.
Yeah.
He's probably like, that's south of the border.
Oh, my God. We're all, we have guys.
What are we talking about?
I couldn't be sorrier.
We are getting the wrap-up signal like you
couldn't
wouldn't
be sorrier.
Believe. Like you wouldn't believe.
That's our show this week. This was insane.
This took a lot of turns, for sure.
We tried.
It was a week. We'll see you next week.